All right, this is Zeb Brannigan. You're listening to The Geek Show.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to 4Panel, the Geek Show's dedicated comics, manga, graphic literature, and various things like that podcast. My name's Rob, and joining me today are the spectacular Mick and the amazing Andrew.
Hello.
I feel very sleepy.
You'll never guess who's just been to see Spider-Man today.
Was it me? Did I go to see Spider-Man today?
No, it was me, which is why I used spectacular and amazing to describe you two.
Oh, because right. Those are like the Spider-Man club. I get it.
Hey, we
thought it was just because that's what we are.
Hey. If I was going to describe myself, I was going to go with superior, but then I realised just how creepy superior Spider-Man was.
And also we would have laughed openly in your face.
Yes.
I don't know. I can see Rob kind of pretending to be the nephew of the woman he used to be almost married to.
Exactly.
Tell us some news, Rob.
Well,
how old is Dr. Octopus supposed to be?
I don't know. I get the feeling he's...
Isn't Aunt May like 98 or whatever?
Yeah, I get the feeling...
700 years old.
I get the feeling that Otto Octavius is a bit like Monty Burns. His age is actually indeterminate. He just sits there going excellent all the time.
I mean, to be fair, that's just like most comic book characters, isn't it?
Oh my God.
Does Captain America ever just like wake up in the morning and just go, how come Spider-Man's gone from a teenager to an adult, but I've stayed the exact same age for like 15 years?
I've just suddenly thought, is Monty Burns actually, you know, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure? They just wander around going excellent all the time. But then what's his face? Keanu Reeves, his career took off, but the other fella, his career didn't take off. So did he just evolve into Monty Burns?
Monty Burns is Bill S. Preston.
Yes.
Which... I like that I know that character's full name and yet have no idea what the actor was called.
Exactly. Well, I'm just picturing his face and superimposing it onto Monty Burns and then just hearing them both go, excellent.
What I really want now is for him to show up in John Wick 3.
Air guitaring.
Yeah.
Oh, so, yeah.
Air guitaring's probably banned from inside the confines of the Continental.
So that definitely violates the rules.
Yeah. Either that or they have a special room for it.
Ian McShane would not be pleased.
Oh.
Now can we do some news, Rob?
Yes, we can. Apparently, the next DCEU film that's going to start shooting in January is Shazam, which is starring Dwayne Johnson as Black...
Actually, fun fact, no, it's not.
Is it not?
Quite recently, he would... that DC announced that he dropped out.
Has he?
So all the things we know about Shazam can be summed up as nothing.
I heard a rumour about Arnie Hammer.
Yeah, he might be Shazam, which I think I could see that.
But then that doesn't really constitute news, does it? Because, you know, I might be Shazam. Andrew might be Shazam. Rob, I'm sorry you're out of the running. But
how am I out of the running?
Because I just decided.
No, I could play Black Adam.
We're talking about Shazam.
Yeah, I know. He's in there.
Yeah.
That's why Rob's out the running, because he's always already confirmed as being Black Adam.
Exactly.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, right, okay. So that's
why you're out the running for Shazam.
Oh, right, okay, right.
Actually, you are, Mick, you can be Shazam.
Yeah.
And I'll be Captain Marvel Jr.
You're going to be Billy
Excellent.
Batson.
So
Andrew's going to be Billy Batson. And you can be...
So, based on the last few podcasts,
yeah,
you've got the scriptwriters of She-Hulk playing Black Adam and Shazam. That's going to mess with fandom's heads, isn't it?
Finally, it's the DC Marvel singularity.
Oh, God.
In which a 26-year-old plays a 10-year-old boy, and a man from Leeds has the power of the gods.
Egyptian gods.
Yes, indeed. So basically, the one bit of news about Shazam that we had isn't.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
But it's been replaced that we now know maybe where it's going to start filming.
Shall we call this the section formerly known as the news section?
Well, they've announced that they're going to start filming in January. That's it. That's the only thing we know.
Yeah, they're going to start filming. They haven't they haven't actually made any decisions on who's going to be in front of the cameras, but they're just going to do some nice establishing shots.
Maybe go to Egypt and start taking some nice shots of the pyramids.
Yeah, get some clean plates for the CGI sequences.
Maybe that's an entire hiring strategy, is they're just going to wait for someone to walk in front of the camera.
Congratulations. Congratulations, stranger with camel.
Hang on, is that how bad DC is right now with their movies? Have their movies sunk so low that even Wonder Woman can't save them? They have to rely on random people to be in their movies because no stars want to be.
Well,
they can't hire anyone, so they have to trick them into being in their films.
They could go for that one-dimensional kind of problem-solving thing and decide that actually the only way to save the DCEU is to have Gal Gadot play everything.
Oh, God, no. Now, Gal Gadot playing everything is probably not a good idea because I'm just... No. My mind is rebelling.
Boy, I can't wait for the new series of Gotham starring Gal Gadot as Harvey Bullock.
Oh, God. I'm just imagining.
Anton Gordon.
I'm just imagining Suicide Squad, but with Gal Gadot as every single character. Deadshot, Joker.
No, I've just realised how Gotham can be even better if, like, she has to wear the mustache on, like, one side of her face when she's Jim Gordon. And then, like, she just spins to face the other side of the camera.
Oh.
Oh.
And the thing is, even with half a moustache on her face, half the men in the world would still basically know their place in the universe because of how pretty she is.
Yeah.
I just hope that in the DC writers' room, someone's saying, damn it, we need someone who can play Superman in the next movie. And then she just bursts in and says, well, I'm your gal.
Oh.
Like, I assume that's just how she enters, like, a room. And if it's not, it should be.
Oh.
So...
CDC, this is what happens when you don't announce proper film details.
Yeah.
You can't blame that pun on me, Mick.
I know. I was just thinking, Rob has one job on this podcast, and that's to kill or deliver bad punchlines.
And if you take my job away from me, you know, if you take my job away from me, Andrew, what am I going to do? How am I going to feed myself?
Because we've seen the redundancy package. It's not great.
Oh.
You basically get a call. You basically get an old review copy of Suicide Squad extended cut.
Oh, God. Anyway, speaking of food, or rather, not speaking of food. Technically, I suppose it is food. KFC and DC Entertainment have announced the third installment.
I mean, you act all high and mighty, but you forget we used to like share the same office.
Yeah, I know.
And we've seen the buckets, Rob.
Yeah. Hey. We never got buckets, we got boxes. It's because it was the closest place that actually did anything resembling food. And everywhere else was just this unidentifiable mess. We're not sure whether it was animal, mineral, or vegetable.
If I remember, the Middlesbrough KFC slogan was KFC, it's survivable.
Exactly. But anyway, KFC and DC Entertainment have announced the third installment of the popular Colonel Sanders and Justice League team-up comic book series.
Excuse me, while I just go to dictionary.com and look up the meaning of the word popular.
It's KFC number 3, Across the Universe, and the Colonel goes cosmic in a star-spanning quest to bring crunchy, spicy satisfaction to a hungry universe, only to face a thieving varmint.
This is possibly the worst-sounding crossover I've heard of since Nicotine for Superman in school education posters about anti-smoking in the 70s.
Oh no, it gets better. Some thieving varmint steals his spacebound Zinger chicken sandwiches, and only Green Lantern can help the Colonel scan the universe to catch the thief.
I mean, I don't think it really counts as theft if you're just like hurling fried chicken into the atmosphere.
I know.
I think that falls under finders keepers.
I mean, how is he getting it into the atmosphere? Does he have like a giant slingshot or a catapult?
You know when you come across a phrase that you never thought you'd hear or read?
What?
Well, on that news story is the phrase, a thieving varmint who steals his space-bound Zinger chicken sandwiches.
Exactly.
That is a lot to unpack.
Okay, but that one was a smart joke.
But But
did you do that job by accident, Andrew?
I've also just seen the title of the first two in the series.
Oh.
If you can indeed call one comic a year a series. The Colonel of Two Worlds. And Colonel Corps.
That's just a confusing military structure.
It is. You couldn't have a whole corps of colonels.
Well, who do they command?
Exactly. Who gives the orders? All of them.
See, every time you're saying, you know, when you say the Colonel Corps, I'm getting confused between the colonel in the military, the Colonel Kentucky Fried Chicken, and colonels of corn, because KFC do sell corn.
Well, I can tell you that, by the way it's spelled, it's not the last one.
Also, I take issue with you saying that military colonels and the colonel are different. You doubting his military credentials, Rob?
Yes.
Yes, because it's actually a point of fact that he wasn't a colonel.
Exactly.
It's a well-documented fact, to be fair.
My entire world has been rocked.
He's been lying to you all these years.
But his chicken's so
tasty. No, I just feel like a fool all those times I saluted.
I find it winning that you didn't feel like a fool anyway, doing that.
But Colonel Sanders fought and died for us. I showed the man some respect, but now it's all a lie.
You want to see him at the flag raising? You know, the KFC flag raising? He's all tears and, you know, and honour and pride.
But not anymore.
Fighting for truth, justice and 14 herbs and spices.
The only advertising left because the other three are technically illegal.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't mention the crack cocaine.
You know what? I'm just going to say it. I'm glad that someone stole a space chicken. What you deserve, Colonel Sanders.
Oh, dear. So, anyway, it's been a slow news week, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been a slow news week. But Andrew has something.
I did. I had just a little thing that, well, I say little thing. It's only like the biggest celebrity divorce since Bradgelina. That is, that Sega and Archie Comics have ended their partnership. That's effectively killing the Sonic the Hedgehog comic.
Oh?
Yeah. Apparently they've, like, in the usual incredibly helpful press release thing, they've said they want to go in a different direction.
What, right to left?
Yeah, that's it. Sonic the manga is the next big thing.
Right.
Look out for magical schoolgirl Sonic the Hedgehog.
Oh, please don't.
Coming to a comic store near you soon.
Please don't. You've said it, and now it's going to happen.
There's a gag about rings in there that I'm just going to leave hanging.
I'm not even going to go there. You can if you want, Mick. If that's what you're into, go for Sonic's rings if you want. I'm not going there. All I know is Sonic's...
Well, I don't know if it's what Mick's into, but certainly what Sonic's into.
Well, yeah. All I know is Sonic's been around a lot of rings, and whenever you punch him, it all comes out.
Yes.
I doubt any of us... Have you even read Sonic the Comic?
I have read one on a free comic book.
Sonic the comic was like the UK thing from ages ago.
I've read one from a free comic book day years ago.
Yeah, but I guess it's like one of those things that's a bit like vanilla ice cream. You'd never order it, but you expect to see it around. And actually, it's weird that it's gone now.
Yeah, actually, on the subject of free comic book day, I didn't know this, but apparently, you know the comics that we pick up on free comic book day?
Yeah.
I found people selling them for like $3.99, $4.99 on eBay. They're like, these are free. Why are you selling them? God.
Well, some of them do become worth something because they're issue ones of something.
Yeah.
Plus, I guess it's not like you just stroll down to a shop and get them now.
I mean, it depends on how scrupulous some traders are. For example, I'm quite lucky, my local comic shop, to get rid of some of the free comic book day stock, they occasionally do. Every purchase, you get a free comic, and they just give you one of the leftover stock of free comics, which you choose. They don't just palm you off with, like, you know, stuff that no one wants.
Oh, that's nice.
So which...
That does not sound like certain organizations that I frequent.
Yeah, which is why coming up soon, I will be reviewing Lady Mechanica.
Yeah, excellent. Excellente.
But not today.
Sonic the Hedgehog comics have been around for 24 years.
Wow.
That's almost as old as me.
That's longer than Sega lasted as a console manufacturer.
It is, actually. So, shall we take a break there?
Yes, let's.
TV. There's a lot of TV, even the internet is TV these days. And if there's too much out there to know what to watch and what not to watch, well, tune in to the Geek Show Podcast Network's very own TV show, On The Box.
I'm Christopher Sabat, voice of Alex Louis Armstrong, the Strong Arm Alchemist. And you're listening to The Geek Show, which has been passed down the Armstrong line for a generation or two.
This is Andy from Literary Lightroom, telling you to go and listen to us, where we literally light it about everything literary, with far too much lightroom.
Welcome back to 4Panel, and our unprecedented review section. You can only get it here, folks.
I mean, I think calling it both unprecedented and review section is selling us a bit too much.
That's the secret of marketing. You can never oversell.
Have you not listened to the show before?
You can underdeliver, but you can't oversell.
He's got a point.
He does. I don't like it. Kick him off immediately. Well, none of this having points business on here. Anyway, I'll kick things off. I've been reading Shirtless Bear Fighter, which is written by Jody Lehup and Sebastian Gerner, with art by Neil Vendrell. So, Shirtless Bear Fighter is about a man who fights bears and doesn't wear a shirt.
So it very much delivers exactly what it says on the tin.
It is. See that's how you not oversell.
I didn't say you had to oversell. I just said it was difficult to oversell.
Also, it's also difficult to explain Shirtless Bear Fighter in like any sort of coherent way. Basically, it's about a naked man whose junk has been pixelated, who runs around a forest punching bears.
Was it the bears who pixelated his junk?
I mean, I think that was probably the artist.
Okay.
It's one of those things where just every page is more ludicrous than the last. Like, it starts with him kind of like bursting out of the woods to save a couple, using his patented bear punch. Then, like, dragging the bear back to his house, which is made entirely out of bear pelts. Then, like, it cuts to behind the house where the FBI are waiting for him, because they need his help dealing with bearerists.
Bearerists?
Yep, terrorist bears. And then you get what is possibly my favourite scene in anything, which is just, like, the FBI comes and says, "The world needs the bear fighter." But then he says, "The world can go to hell for all I care." And the FBI agent goes, "They're in the city, Shirtless." And he spins around to face them and says, "You've got 5 minutes." And kind of just at the bottom of the panel, there's a tiny sound effect. And it's just the word slap as he's spun around.
Okay. And Shirtless is actually his name?
Yes, his name is Shirtless Bear Fighter.
That's handy then, given his chosen occupation.
He was raised by bears. But one day...
But clearly traumatised by the experience.
Well, no, it's his experience that taught him that he had to defend the woods from bears who have gone rogue.
Oh, so he only punches rogue bears?
Yeah, don't worry, he only kills the evil bears.
All right, okay. You see, this is where I was struggling. I was struggling with where his motivation came from.
Hey, well, you wouldn't want to read a book about a guy who just kills any old bear.
Well... Exactly that, you know, I mean...
That's not how you get a likeable protagonist.
Exactly.
Do you know how you do get a likeable protagonist?
Tell us.
Bear Jet.
What?
So you know how I said that Shirtless Bear Fighter lives in a house made entirely out of bear pelts?
Yeah.
This has a jet fighter also made entirely out of bear pelts.
What?
Well, that's believable.
You're right, that is the moment that this book lost its suspension of disbelief.
Oh, now that's just a bear-related item too far.
My brain's trying to figure out the aerodynamics of bear pelts and the temperature resistance of bear pelts.
In fairness, I think any attempt to rationalise any element of what Andrew's just described is basically time better spent doing something else.
like examining the flashback where we see baby Shirtless Bear Fighter, who also has a gigantic beard, and a pixelated nether region the same size as the adult Shirtless Bear Fighter.
Right.
Also, he gets paid in flapjacks.
What?
Like, the FBI, they tried to negotiate a deal. They just pay him in, like, flapjacks and the finest Canadian maple syrup.
Okay.
This comic is absolutely nonsense, and I love every second of it.
As soon as I saw the title of it, though, Shirtless Bear Fighter, I thought, Andrew's going to want that.
How do I follow that?
I don't know. I'm going to follow it by going off planet. Hieroglyph, a very, very odd set of four comics by Ricardo Delgado from Dark Horse from around, from like the early noughties. I think it was around 99, 2000, something like that. And it's only four issues, but it was really weird because I saw the cover of it. I thought, this is a bit Cthulhu-esque. I wonder if it's something that Andrew might be interested in. So I got it and I read it. I thought, this is nothing like Cthulhu, but it is, but it isn't. Because Hieroglyph is basically, you have this one guy, he's on a ship, he goes to a planet and he finds these ruins on the planet. And he sees some kind of insectoid type creatures who are on the planet and they've got these little kind of runes and stuff like that. And these runes give them powers. And it doesn't seem like there's any point to this story other than saying this guy is now stranded on this planet because he got involved in some other alien race's culture. So they destroyed his ship and he's now stuck there.
Was he the one who stole the spacebound chicken zingers?
Possibly he was.
And now he's been stranded by the Colonel as an act of cosmic revenge.
Oh my God, if you're now describing the Colonel as a giant cross between Cthulhu and a praying mantis, only kind of cosmic, yes, I'll believe it. But yeah, Hieroglyph.
Human bodies, they're mandible licking good.
They're mandible licking good. Oh, Hieroglyph's an odd comic. It reminds me of, do you remember the Heavy Metal magazine? It reminds me of some of the stories you used to get in that, where it was just like a little one-off sci-fi story, but didn't really have much point beyond the author saying, look what I can do. And this kind of feels like that. It kind of feels like Ricardo Delgado's going, look what I can do. I can write. I can draw. Give me a job, somebody. Because I've got to say, ultimately, the story's not very interesting. The artwork's really nice, you know? The creature designs, the ruins, the world itself, all really nicely drawn, really nicely colored. But there's just nothing there. It's just like the planet it's set on. It's just kind of barren.
But don't you see, Rob, that's the point. It's an artistic expression of the loneliness of space travel and the emptiness of promises.
Yeah, but I mean, you've got this one guy trying to understand this alien culture and just relying on himself, not relying on records or anything like that. He's just going around looking at these ruins and these hieroglyphs that are on the ruins and trying to figure things out. And you go, okay, fine. But surely if he's an archaeologist, he'd have like a team. I've done some archaeology in the past and usually there's a team. You don't go charging in by yourself because you're not Indiana Jones, especially when it's on another planet.
Well, do you know who else had a team?
Who?
The people in Prometheus.
Yeah, true.
And they were the worst space archaeologists.
Well, yeah, of course they were.
In fairness, he only stipulated that you needed a team. He didn't say it had to be a very good team.
So it was a team
this
of people
who...
Was the team for Prometheus a team of people who were actually picked last for other teams?
Yeah.
That explains a lot.
They were the ones who were left behind when everybody else stepped forward for the important missions.
Plus, maybe they were just the people who didn't bother to ask why Guy Ritchie was wearing old man makeup.
Ritchie?
Yeah, Guy Ritchie, Prometheus.
Yes.
Doing his finest Guy Pearce impersonation.
Yes, that's what I meant. I knew what I said. I know people's names.
Guy Ritchie in that film, that would have been an entire...
It was actually an incredibly clever bit of meta-commentary and you just don't understand it. I'm smart and I make good jokes.
Oh.
So nice to look at, but ultimately...
Quite empty. Yeah, there's not really much there to keep your attention. Really nice pictures, but that's about it. There's not really much more I can say about it. I mean, that is literally it. If it had something more, I mean, it alludes to a story. There are hints of a story, but you don't really get a story.
Right.
It's a shame because it's one of those great concepts. It's, you know, really interesting to, especially for a sci-fi junkie like me, where it's talking about like the ruins of ancient civilizations in space or the ruins of alien civilizations. And I'm thinking, okay, this is really hitting this, you know, really pressing all the right sci-fi buttons for me. And then nothing. You know, disappointment.
So that's if you just like goes to this planet, finds some ruins, toddles back off again.
Well, no, he goes to the planet, finds some ruins, sees that there's people still living on the planet, and basically just goes around more ruins, few more ruins, sees some giant insects, gets attacked by a giant insect, finds a rune that apparently has powers, and then goes back to his ship, only to find there's a priest from one from the religion that is on the planet. He wants the rune. Guy doesn't want to give it to him because he thinks, oh yeah, you're going to kill everyone on the planet. And so the priest blows up his ship. So the guy's now stranded. That's it. Oh, and I also forgot, he gets captured by a tribe and has to fight his way out. Yay.
Okay. Sounds like he could have done with a shirtless bear fighter on his team. Unless, of course, they weren't alien bears, in which case...
No, they were more kind of insectoid. He could have done with Indy. He needs an Indiana Jones.
Oh, Sherlock Holmes. You know, the character in those two Guy Pearce films that I really like. I mean, I say really like, they're okay.
Anyway, Mick.
See, that was funny because I was subverting the mistake I made earlier. See, I'm smart.
Yes, I'm also delving into the world of Dark Horse Comics with an epic. So epic, in fact, that I haven't had a chance to finish it. And that's The Life and Times of Martha Washington in the 21st Century. A 600-page comic. Yes, that's right, 600 pages. 20 years in the making.
Wow.
Written by Frank Miller and Dave Gibbons, and both of them are in their absolute element. They have created a female character who is born in the ghetto in Chicago at the latter end of the 20th century, 1995 to be precise, and she grows up in a world where the constitution of the US government is a plaything for the president. He manages to become effectively an immortal president. He abandons the whole idea of only having two terms as a maximum and stuff like that until he's assassinated. And then he gets replaced by someone who's got an ecological agenda, and things start out really well. And they protect the Amazon rainforest from being, pillaged by the fast food companies. And Martha ends up joining the Peace Corps, or the Peace Troops, who go in to take on evil around the world. And it's kind of the story of the ultimate corruption, because it's clear that they're heading towards some kind of utopia, but then it gets really badly corrupted. And it's Frank Miller at his absolute best, turning round the story of corruption of individuals into masterful satire, as well as a quite disturbing vision of the future. And Dave Gibbons is in his element, drawing the kind of future that he first cut his teeth on the pages of 2000 AD and Doctor Who magazine. And, you know, just by describing it as a 600-page masterpiece, it is an epic story. There's an arch nemesis in the form of the Surgeon General, who subverts the old adage that crime is a disease, and actually turns it around to make it out that disease is a crime and it's punishable by death. So he has an army of health troops that go around killing people who are ill.
Okay.
But there's a whole load of commentary about cessation from the United States. So you have civil war in America. You have a new American civil war. You have an uprising of women who take over a portion of the United States and call it the first sex state. Texas does its usual and splits off as soon as it gets the chance.
Well, Texas is always going to do that. Texas is actually waiting right now for a civil war to happen so it can do that.
The big fast food corporations, Fat Boy Burger and its ilk, they form a conglomerate that separates under its own government. New York ends up having its own little civil war between all the different sections. So Brooklyn, Manhattan, they go to war against each other until ultimately they become a state of their own, led by a dictator.
I just want to ask one question about the fast food ones. Does the colonel actually get military experience and become a proper colonel?
No, the one that you see is Fat Boy Burger, and basically Fat Boy Burger, you know, like you see in comic books and cartoons and stuff, you see those sort of giant versions, a bit like the Mr. Stay Puff Marshmallow Man in Ghostbusters, those mascots that are like humongous 20 feet things.
It's the lard lad from The Simpsons, isn't it? You know, the giant donut holding boy.
Yeah, basically. They turn those into like war machines. So if you imagine Iron Man crossed with a Mr. Stay Puft type Max mascot, they go into war against the Pax troops, and that's what you see Martha fighting against.
Oh my God, but, mechanized Ronald McDonald.
Basically,
no.
Yeah.
No, no, it's too far, Rob, too far.
So this is what Martha's up against, and she's just a survivor, and it's a page turner, which, you know, you could argue is the basic requirement from a comic, but although it's taking me a while to get through it, that's simply because there's so much story to get through. And there's not a dull moment in it so far. And it's also supplemented, obviously, over the 20 years, it's had sort of limited runs, one-shots, etc. And in the preface to each era, Dave Gibbons has given a commentary about the lead-up to it and the events in the real world that shaped the way the story went, which adds a little bit of context to some of the content, and it's a damn good read. And also, just lifting it up to read it saves you a fortune on gym membership.
Okay.
Which is everything you can want in a book.
Yeah.
So, Andrew, you're up again.
Yep. So, I have also been reading the latest Carnage series from Marvel. Carnage being kind of the red symbiote Venom knockoff.
Yeah.
So it's been, to be honest, I've never really been a big fan of Carnage, but they put a little preview for this series in one of Marvel's Point One things they do. You know, it's kind of like a slightly larger than normal comic filled with all previews for their new series. And just, it seemed quite interesting, so I gave it a go.
Okay.
And yeah, I did not regret it. It's written by Jerry Conway, who actually did a lot of Marvel's horror comics in the 70s, like Tomb of Dracula and stuff like that. With art by Mike D. Perkins. And it's basically like they wrote this specifically for me, because it starts off with the FBI developing a plan to catch Carnage by having basically someone who survived one of his serial killer rampages back when he was just a normal serial killer kind of come on TV and sort of, you know, brag about the fact that she survived. This causing him to, you know, go in a bit of a rage and decide he was going to take her out. So they lure that to use that to lure Carnage to an abandoned mine, but things go a bit wrong, and he ends up falling into a deep chasm in the mine, where he discovers a temple with basically a bunch of robed figures praying to the dark elder god C'thon and heralding Carnage as the Red Slayer.
Okay,
who is like destined to bring their god into the world.
That doesn't sound like a good idea.
Well, probably to people who aren't, like, psychotic serial killers.
That's what I mean.
Which, to be honest, is most of us.
Yeah, it's good. It's like it's basically Marvel doing some Lovecrafty stuff, as basically kind of just, like, travels around the world, trying to, like, resurrect this dead god, and kind of chasing over, like, a weird assortment of characters. You've got, kind of, a couple of FBI people, Eddie Brock, the former Venom, and Man-Wolf, who is a man who turns into a wolf.
Yeah, I was about to say, Man-Wolf, as in, I thought for a second he was half-man, half-wolf, in kind of the way of Man-Bat.
No, he is like J. Jonah Jameson's son, who can transform into a werewolf.
Okay, Man-Wolf is an awful name for him then.
Yeah, but Universal probably on the rights to Wolf-Man.
I wasn't going to say Wolf-Man either.
What? How could you suggest that Marvel would ever, like, do something as cynical as to just swap around the name of an existing property and claim it as their own?
I didn't suggest that. You inferred it from what I said.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about Underworld, where they're not called, like, werewolves or man-wolf or any codenames. They're just called, like, Jeff and Steve and stuff like that.
Yeah, but in that world, they're a perfectly normal thing.
Yeah.
Whereas in the world of Marvel Comics, they're not.
You have a guy who can crawl along walls like a spider.
You say that, but surely relatively, they're fairly normal.
That's what I'm saying. In the on balance, a guy who turns into who is a werewolf is actually kind of normal compared to some of the other outlandish things we've seen in Marvel Comics.
But there is still a population of America in the Marvel Comics that is predominantly not super or mutant or strange. I mean, obviously the balance is shifting year on year, but...
Or smart. Because if you say, werewolf, they're going to do that line from Young Frankenstein, aren't they?
Yeah.
Oh, anyway.
Well, yeah, you know, it's a fun read. Like, there's a bit where Carnage basically gets the power to, like, put bits of his symbiote in other people, turning them into, like, crazy red zombie things.
Okay, now it's starting to sound more like Stubbs the Zombie. Did you ever play that, Andrew?
No, I did not.
On the Xbox. It's starting to sound
like that. I've literally never owned an Xbox in my life.
There's a game on the Xbox called Stubbs the Zombie where you could take, like, your hand and you had, like, unlimited hands and you could, like, have your hand as, like, a little kind of robot thing that goes around and clamps on someone's head and you then control them so you could create your own zombie army.
See, that sounds almost as cool as my idea of Emperor Palpatine just screaming, hands, unlimited hands, as, like, tiny fingers sprout from his already there fingers.
It got stranger with Stubbs the Zombie. You could rip out, like, organs from yourself and use them as grenades, and your farts were, like, poison gas and stuff like that.
Okay.
It's a very strange game.
Okay. I feel like I need to mention now, Carnage's farts are not toxic. That is kind of where the book seems to draw the line.
That's a shame.
Has that categorically been stated?
That is a good point. They don't say his farts are not toxic, so...
Does he wear a fedora?
No, Robbie does not wear a fedora.
I'm just checking because it's sounding very similar to Stubbs the Zombie, so I'm just checking it's not actually Stubbs.
So that's Carnage. That's a good book. I'm going to sit here and be more confused about Stubbs the Zombie.
I can lend you an Xbox and the game if you want.
Not particularly, no.
I am an Xbox gamer and I'm unaware of it, Andrew, so I think Rob may have imagined it.
No, I actually own the game.
Do you want to read about a werewolf fighting a tenderly alien monster? Then Carnage is a book you should read. And of course you want to read about a werewolf fighting a tenderly alien monster, because that's awesome.
Yeah, because when you describe it like that, then it sounds amazing. And you know what? You know DC going around doing all these weird crossovers? Well, they actually did one that didn't suck. And wasn't
God, if this is Batman meets Stubbs the Zombies? I'm quitting the show.
No. They actually did a crossover that doesn't suck, that actually made sense, that was only slightly confusing at the beginning, but then actually balanced out, and you actually could follow the story. And I'm shocked. I'm actually blown away by it. And it is a Green Lantern crossover, and it's the one that we thought would actually work as a crossover: Green Lantern and Space Ghost.
Oh, which, to be fair, Space Ghost is like an actual superhero.
Yeah, and it starts off with Hal Jordan hunting a yellow lantern whose name I can't care to remember. But anyway, he ends up at kind of this dimensional crossing point type thing, and this yellow lantern, this insectoid yellow lantern type thing is there, and they're fighting, and then Space Ghost turns up because he sensed something like a disturbance in the Force, even though... he doesn't use the Force. And he sees these two characters fighting each other using superpowers. Now, he's heard rumors of a weapon being developed in this area of space. So that's why he's come to investigate. And he thinks one of them is this weapon, you know, kind of a robot in human form. So he's determined to take down both of them. Hal and the Yellow Lantern, they all get into this three-way fight. Yellow Lantern gets away, but Space Ghost and Hal end up in a fight, a big punch-up with each other, and land on a planet where apparently it's covered by darkness. They can't see stars. They think there's nothing in the sky. The sky just ends and that's it. There's only their planet in existence, nothing else. Which is where my first bit of confusion comes in, because I'm thinking, hang on, how do they have the sun if there's nothing else? If they can't see stars or anything like that? If this shroud is covering the planet so no light from stars or anything gets through?
It was just someone with a flashlight.
it's a good point.
It's a bloody big flashlight. That's all I can say. But leaving that to one side, because that actually is a minor quibble, this comic actually makes a lot. It actually works. Space Ghost and Hal Jordan are basically, they're both like intergalactic peacekeepers, basically space cops. That's what they both are in their respective universes. And so after a bit of a punch up, they eventually bury the hatchet. They get to know a couple of the locals, one of whom is developing the weapon that Space Ghost knows has come to find. And the main reason he wants to make it is because he wants the civil war that's raging across the planet to stop. so they can start looking beyond the planet at space. He believes there's something beyond the planet. But since it's covered by this shroud of darkness, he can't see it. You know, he just has this belief. And so, yeah, I'm surprised. I'm actually shocked, in fact, that I enjoyed this. Didn't think I would, but it really works. Space Ghost and Green Lantern actually works as a crossover. And given some of the other DC crossovers that I've read, this is really, really, it's really surprising.
That's you sound all like quite emotional there, Rob.
I am. I'm kind of, it's got me. It's got me. Because DC actually did something that was worth reading.
I'm sorry, but I strongly disagree.
Oh?
I think this comic commits one sin that is absolutely unforgivable.
Oh, what's that?
And that is that it's not called Green Lantern Space Ghost Coast to Coast City.
No, but, in this comic, Green Lantern says, if you're ever in my dimension, look me up. And Space Ghost says, yeah, because I want one of those rings. And also, the little girl that they make friends with on the planet, she's been promised a Space Ghost badge by Space Ghost. So now she's heading out into the universe, off the planet. She's about to go out into the universe looking for Space Ghost and Hal Jordan. So you might actually have a sequel, which could possibly be called Coast to Coast City.
Better be.
And if it isn't, there will be trouble.
Also, when are DC going to do Hawkman meets Harvey Birdman Attorney at Law?
I don't know, but I really want that one. Oh, God, can you imagine if Harvey Birdman was actually the divorce lawyer for him and Hawkgirl?
Well, obviously, that'll have to wait until the highly popular KFC series ends.
Yeah, but it'll be like DC's version of Kramer versus Kramer, Hawk versus Hawk. We decide who gets the mace.
Harvey Birdman wins for Hawk Woman by pointing out that Carter couldn't even be bothered to wear a shirt to court.
Exactly.
Dear,
finds him in contempt.
Oh. Okay.
So, anyway, I believe we had some complaints to end the show on.
We do. And unusually, not about us.
Yes.
So, every year, the BBFC publish a report, and one of the key elements of that annual report is the most complained about movies of the year. And the annual report for 2016 has now been released, and comic book movies feature highly in the list of most complained about movies. Mostly the complaints are around the classification that's been given and why it isn't suitable for that particular movie. So I'm going to go in reverse order. So apparently 10 people wrote into the BBFC to complain about the level of threat, violence, and the dark tone of Batman versus Superman Dawn of Justice. Because, like, those were the problems with that movie.
I think it was more than 10 people. It's just all the other ones were, like, from fans who just scribbled the word on a piece of paper.
No, those 10 people are the 10 people who haven't discovered the internet yet.
So, at the bottom of the list, 10 people complained about BVS. Just above it was 10 Cloverfield Lane, where people complained about the level of violence in a 12A classified film. 19 weren't happy with the 15 rated Sausage Party because of the strong sex references and level of naughty language. 19 people complained about the level of violence in the 12A rated Jason Bourne.
Can I just
Jason Bourne was 12A.
Yeah, I just want to add my complaint.
12A Jason Bourne.
Yeah, that's my complaint. You made a 12A Jason Bourne. Obviously, it's not going to be very good if it's 12A.
So, the next one was the absolute horror, the body-churning grizzle fest that was Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. 20 people argued that it was too scary a movie for the 12A rating that it got.
So, I just want to bring up, it's a kids' movie, yeah?
Yeah.
These people obviously haven't seen The Dark Crystal or Watership Down, which was once rated as Universal before it was given a PG rating as a final thing.
That's true.
See, I'd like to imagine all the children distressed that Tim Burton is still allowed to make films, despite obviously having lost his Dutch.
Yeah, well, you know, the complaint was that it was too scary. Now, next up, with 30 complaints, was Suicide Squad.
Oh.
Now, this is the interesting part about Suicide Squad. 30 complaints were received, mainly from people who couldn't see it rather than those who did. I would say they were actually the lucky ones.
And they were complaining that they couldn't see it.
Yeah.
But it was
what
everywhere.
They should be doing is thanking people.
Thing is, it was everywhere when it came out. How did they not see it? Or were they just too young?
They were just too young. 30 complaints, mainly from children under the age of 15, or their parents who were hoping the movie would have got a 12A certificate.
Okay, so not going there, not seeing it.
But, you know.
I wonder why they wanted to see the film.
Yeah, I know.
They dodged a bullet, I think. And in top spot, the film that generated the largest number of complaints to the BBFC was Deadpool. It attracted 51 complaints, primarily about the level of violence in the movie. Sex references and strong language were also complained about. I think basically it's a misunderstanding on the part of the people who are judging it, because it's almost like they've assumed that because it's a comic book movie, it's a 12A, and then they've gone to see it and thought, well, that was a bit strong for a 12A, without actually, you know, I don't know, looking at the big board that says this film has been classified 15.
Oh my God, if Deadpool was a 12A, then my God, can you imagine what Teletubbies and In the Night Garden are like?
Now the thing is, right, I do have some experience of a 12A friendly version of Deadpool.
Was this an in-flight movie?
Last year I went on a flight and Deadpool was one of the movies on offer, and it, obviously because they have no control over who's watching the screen, they have to make it a family-friendly affair. It was 45 minutes long, and you know the scene where Deadpool is courting? That goes from them meeting in the bar and having the conversation to him proposing.
Okay.
All the bits in between, gone.
What, not even the happy abstinence, David?
Yeah,
not
all
even.
That cut. Well, I guess they had to cut that bit because it wouldn't have made any sense without the rest of it.
But nothing, none of it would make sense without the rest of it. You're basically cutting Deadpool out of Deadpool.
It has to be said, if Ryan Reynolds had been paid per minute of his appearance in the film on that cut, he'd have needed more BT adverts to supplement his income.
Does Deadpool just become a man whose only role in life is to stand there and explain what he's doing?
Pretty much, yeah.
I thought that's what he was doing anyway. I thought that was Deadpool's role.
I mean, literally to say, this man did bad things to me, I want to kill him now. I killed him in a bit you didn't see. The yep. End.
So yeah, there were other bits in there. I think that the only sequence that was relatively unscathed was the sequence where they have the showdown with Ajax and Colossus and Teenage Megasonic Warhead. That bit stayed relatively intact with a few sweary words cut out, but 45 minutes long for a 12A version of Deadpool.
Wow.
So.
But yeah, no, it's like all these parents were like, oh, how could you let my child play Call of Duty?
Yeah. No one told me it was all about killing. It was called Call of Duty. I expected it to fill them full of moral fiber.
It was called Grand Theft Auto. I didn't realise it was a game where they'd become criminals and go around selling drugs and running guns and dealing in prostitution and things like that.
I thought it was just a harmless bit of automobile stealing.
Yes, I thought it was just a harmless bit of car theft.
So there you go. That's the most complained about movies of 2016.
See, I reckon that list isn't telling the whole truth, because it is only from BBFC.
Well, the thing is, the source I got this news from say that the report is a fascinating read, and I would suspect that they got their definition of fascinating from the same dictionary as KFC versus Green Lantern got their definition of popular.
Sounds about right.
So.
I'm still befuddled by this 12A version of Deadpool.
Yes. I think we need to find this 12A version of Deadpool just for Andrew so he can see it and get angry.
Basically, think about the full version of Deadpool. Take out all the fun bits, and that's the 12A version.
So basically it's just set up for jokes and then pulling away before the punchline.
It's very much the rhythm method, yes.
Oh, God. Is this like the tease version of Deadpool, where he's just teasing you for 45 minutes?
Yeah. It's more of an extended trailer.
You might as well just have Ryan Reynolds on the screen going, you want it, you want it, you want it. You can't have it, but you want it, don't you?
Even that, I think, would have been too far.
Even though he's just talking about a Milky Bar or something like that.
Yep.
Or maybe do like the Shia LaBeouf thing of just a video of Ryan Reynolds watching Deadpool, but you can only see his face. Because he did that. Shia LaBeouf did a stream of him watching every single one of his films.
Yeah. Back to back as well.
Yeah.
What strange kind of Clockwork Orange universe was that in?
Strange kind of Clockwork Orange universe.
And it was this year as well.
No. Surely, sure it was like last year or something.
Was it last year? I can't remember. I thought it was this year.
Oh, no. Time doesn't have any meaning when it comes to Shia LaBeouf.
No. Anyway, we're at the end of the show, so we're going to leave you for this week. All of our shows are available on Audio Boom, iTunes, and various other podcast providers of your choice. So if you are listening through one of them, subscribe. It'll keep you up to date with all of our latest shows. We are part of the Geek Show Podcast Network, and there are more shows available like Literary Loitering, Cinema Eclectica, Keyframe, where we talk about animation and stuff like that. And if you are interested in what we do and would like to find out more, then get in touch with us. You'll find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and various other places on the internet, or you can email us studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. And that's about it for the info dump. Until next time, I've been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
And I've been me.
We'll see you all later.
Thanks for listening.